And Riemsdyk on the overlap. Wilson steers. Plenty of room here for a snap pass down low. Broken up in front. 4 minutes into the third period. And 3-2 for Washington. Centering pass. Score! Throw the hats for Alex Ovechkin!
Like, it's flat out fun to watch. It's insane to watch. It's Hart Trophy worthy, this performance by Alexander Ovechkin. Piling up the goals, piling up the points, the Caps piling up the wins. Right now, by the way, Alex Ovechkin trending towards a, wait for it, based on 82 games, 71-goal, 138-point campaign. 36 years old! It's incredible. Someone who knows that all too well is Brian McClellan, Washington Capitals general manager. His team out to a 14-3-5 starts, tops in the division, tops in the league. Brian, how are you today? I'm guessing pretty happy, no?
Yeah, pretty good, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
The pleasure is mine. Like at a certain point, because I know I've reached this point at various times, you know, this season, watching your games and watching Alex Ovechkin, do you just sort of shake your head and wonder how? Like, 36 years old, he seems to have an energy that even 25-year-olds in this game don't have, and a production rate that is, you know, flat out frightening. Like at a certain point, Brian, like, you don't just sort of look at it and shake your head and say, I'm glad he's doing it, but I don't know how he's still doing it.
Yeah, I mean, we say we don't know how he's doing it, but he's playing so well, you know. And I think, you know, from the day one at training camp, he came in and he was in a good spot mentally and a good spot physically. And he, you know, it just looked like he was going to have a good year. I would never have said he would have been doing this well this early, but you watch the games every night and he's just solid. And he's, you know, he's finishing and he's making right plays. I mean, it's as good as I've seen him play in the offensive zone. Mm-hmm. Not just goal scoring, but getting pucks to the right area, making plays, selling shot and making plays. You know, at times he's been pure shot volume, but I think this is the smartest I've seen him play in the offensive zone. And I mean, you can sit here and say, I don't think it's going to continue, but he keeps coming out every night and playing well and producing, you know? So it's been fun to watch. I mean, I think we're getting a little spoiled and, you know, obviously we hope it doesn't stop and he does get, you know, whatever you said there, 71 goals in a full year.
Yeah.
I think that'd be kind of fun.
Yeah. It's like it is flat out fun to watch. And as you know, Mike Kelly pointed this out on Twitter the other day, that, you know, we're used to the OV spot. We're used to the OV office and setting up the one timer. You know, it used to be the green pass, now it's a Carlson pass and the one timer, and good luck catching up to that shot. But he's only scored one goal like that this season, which is remarkable when you really think about it. That's been his bread and butter. Yet here he is changing up the, you know, you mentioned, you know, he's you know, making plays, he's distributing the puck in the offensive zone, and he's not just scoring from that one-time slot, that OV spot anymore. Like, he's scoring all over the ice in the offensive zone, Brian.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think another thing, too, is, I mean, I think it's only 4 power play goals out of those 19. I mean, it's 5-on-5 play. Which is it's hard to score in this league at 5-on-5, and he's putting up goals 5-on-5, and I think, you know, some of it's he's getting rebound goals. He's you know, I saw something where it's only been one-timer goal, so it's not the OV spot like you mentioned. It's he's finding ways. He's adapting in a different way this year than he has, I think, in the past. He's finding different ways to make plays, to score different ways, and it's impressive what he's doing.
You know, we keep, certainly here on this program, we keep saying, like, okay, time is undefeated. Time catches everybody. No one has outrun time. It catches all of us and makes us surrender. But it doesn't seem to exist around Alex Ovechkin, and it doesn't seem to exist around, you know, around your squad. I don't know what it is that's in the water. I don't know. I have no idea. But what is it about this team that, you know, every year people write them off and say, okay, this is the year the car goes off the road and into the ditch, and yet here they are, tops in the division once again. Essentially, Brian, what is it about your team?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're good players. They're really good players. You know, I think we should give Peter Laviolette a lot of credit for what he's done here. You know, our style of play, our system, the players have bought in. While we're having our first line has carried us here, but I think goals against were number six. You know, our PK has been good. So there's some structure, some defensive play that the players are bought into and are playing well for Peter. And he's done a great job with all of our players, but he's done a good job with Ovi. He's done a great job with Kuzi. And he's elevated. He's given them the space to elevate their play. And I think our team play 5-on-5 is as good as it's ever been. And I think that benefits your star players and your older players too. You know, they play a system. They know they'll be rewarded. If they play that system, they'll get chances. They'll get offense. And to get older players, star players to buy into that, he's done a great job.
You know, one of the stories that doesn't get a lot of headlines because a lot of it's dominated by Ovechkin to a certain extent. It's dominated by another, you know, a good season here by a rejuvenated Yevgeny Kuznetsov as well with 27 points in 22 games. But Tom Wilson's a point-of-game player, and Tom Wilson isn't fighting, and Tom Wilson has 8 goals, and Tom Wilson is, you know, one of the more significant contributors in your top 6. What can you tell us about player 43?
Yeah, I think he's had a great year, a great start to the year. You know, I think that Olympic team consideration has got him focused. You know, I think given the year he's had statistically, plus he kills penalties, that he has a good chance of being on that Olympic team. If you're creating a line that's, you know, there for some energy, there for some PK and add offense, I think he's a good addition as any in that role. And I think he's proven it at a different level this year. I mean, I think he's in the top 30 scoring. He's playing with 2 skilled guys. He plays power play with Oshie out. First power play with Oshie out. He plays penalty kill. He's basically doing it all. Plus, he's providing a physical presence and leadership for all the young guys we've had come through here. So it's been an impressive year for Wilson.
One of the things that's not lost on people as well is, you know, the Caps are doing all this. You know, you mentioned a couple of the injuries. You mentioned TJ Oshie. I mean, Anthony Mantha is out. And Nicklas Backstrom. Like, Nicklas Backstrom has not yet played this season, yet the Washington Capitals are thriving. First of all, is there any update on Nicklas Backstrom?
Yeah, I think we've taken it slow. It's been a difficult injury for him to recover from. You know, he played through it at the end of last year. And, you know, I think it was important for us to get him back where the flexibility and strength was at a good level that he wouldn't have to play injury, that he'd be able to play pain-free. So it's been a slow process, but I think he's optimistic, trainer's optimistic, and we're not in a rush. We're going to make sure he's where he needs to be before we put him in a game situation.
Anything on any other injured players, whether it's Oshie, whether it's Mantha, anything else?
Yeah, I mean, Mantha will be long-term. Oshie's week-to-week here. We'll get a good indication today or tomorrow when he's back. Sherry, Schultz, both week-to-week, too. So they should be coming back shortly.
You know, this is a team, the Washington Capitals, that has had success before. They've won the Stanley Cup, yet it always seems as if it's a team that's still, you know, hungry for points in the regular season, as if they still in their minds have something to prove. Like, I look at the Washington Capitals, I look at all these players, and I say, like, Ovechkin's not nothing to prove anymore. Maybe Kuznetsov did because of the soft seasons, and he's come back. But I look at a lot of your players, Brian, and I say, these guys don't have anything to prove to me anymore. Like, they've done it. They've established their reputations. They've won the Stanley Cup. Like, they've been there. What still motivates this team?
I think they do, Jeff. I think they want to win. I mean, it's a prideful group. They want to have good years. You know, I thought we had a really good year last year. We played well, and then we ran into injuries in the playoffs, and then we crashed. You know, we finished at the top with Pittsburgh in the Metro Division. We were one of the top teams in the league. Both specialty teams were good. You know, we got a little unhealthy as we started the playoffs, and we paid a price for it. You know, and I think – coming back this year, you know, some of the guys, I mean, Ovi's obviously hungry. Kuzi's, you know, bent on showing people stuff. Wilson always wants to win. Oshie's a competitor. Eller's a competitor. I think we have competitive guys that really want to win. It's a good environment. So I don't think anybody liked the way we finished last year. And, you know, we're out to prove, you know, people writing us off as an older team and not a contender for the Cup. I think people want to prove it wrong. Players want to prove it wrong.
You know, Sunday's matchup against the Carolina Hurricanes was one that we had circled all weekend long. Okay, here we go. A couple of top teams going at it here. I know the politically correct answer is, well, listen, it's 82 games. It's a long season. We're not going to put too much of a premium on one game, you know, 21 or 22 games into the season. But was that one different for you guys?
Yeah, I think it had a different feel from my perspective. You know, I think any time Carolina upset us 2 years ago in the playoffs, and I think there's, you know, there's a little sting to that still. You know, they're at the top of the league this year. We're, you know, we were trying to catch them. We came in there, and they've been playing well, and we've been playing well, so it sets a tone. The game, from my perspective, felt like a playoff game. It was fast. It was physical. We had a momentum shift a few times. It was a real fun game to watch. The crowd was into it. And two good teams, two skilled teams, battling it out. And unfortunately, we came on top of it.
One final question for you, and this is the GM hat question, and that is, you know, here we are, you know, Sunday was the quarter mark of the season. Everybody knows what they have on their team now. Everyone's in a different spot. Everyone sort of takes survey. What do we have? What do we need? What are we looking at? Eyes to the trade deadline. Is the trade chatter starting to pick up around the league now?
Yeah, I think it's been fairly quiet, Jeff. It's, you know, might start to pick up now. I think there's, you know, there's a couple available, and you're starting to hear more names that might be available. For us specifically, it's been kind of hard for us to identify what we actually need because we've had injured players out, and we've had young guys come in and play well. So it's we're still working out, you know, what are we identifying that we might need going, you know, for the rest of the year. So we're working it out that way, and I'm assuming there's other teams too that are doing the same thing. So it might take a little longer here for the trade market to open up than normal.
So the Carolina game was a special one. Last question for you. What does the Panthers game tonight mean for the Caps? Is it two top teams playing the same week?
Just been here, same thing, you know, last game. I mean, it was a fast game. I mean, Florida plays really well at home. You know, I think Barkov might be out, but it's the same kind of game as the Carolina game. I mean, we got three teams that are, you know, we're used to playing Florida from our old division. So it's it should be a really good game again, just like the Carolina game.
Should be. We have our fingers crossed for this one. Brian, listen, it's a fun run, man. Like, it's fun to watch. Your team is an exciting squad, and as much as Ovechkin gets the headlines, it's the whole team. Thanks so much for doing this. Continued success. Good luck against the Panthers tonight.
Great. Thanks for having me on, Jeff. Appreciate it.
There he is. Brian McClellan is the general manager of the Washington Capitals. This is a team that are defying logic to some in some people's minds, although you look at the lineup and you say, well, yeah, it's a good squad. 14-3-5 to kick off the season. The Washington Capitals, 14-3-5. They are tops in a very, very tough metropolitan division. Now, the Carolina Hurricanes do have two games in hand, but they're also tops tied with the Maple Leafs for 33 points and first in the entire NHL. And more so than ever, Alexander Ovechkin laying claim to being a strong candidate on hockey's Mount Rushmore. The only question is, who does he kick off to get that spot? And the question becomes, is it Rocket Richard? From my corner, absolutely. I think from someone like David Amber's corner, who was on this one early, the Gretzky chase, he has a shot. We all scoffed. DA said, he's got a shot. And we all snickered and said, that's cute. And DA said, he's got a shot. No one's laughing anymore. Everybody's along for the race and along for the fun. Now, Amber was on this one early, and kudos to him. Like, this chase is going to be outstanding. He's hunting down Jager now. Just overtook Brett Hull. Some big names on the horizon for him. The big one, of course, Wayne Gretzky. And that season's away. But I kind of get the feeling now, and I don't think I'm in the minority, that we might just get there sooner than we thought. And whereas we looked at him and said, health may be an issue here, there's no way that someone with that size and playing that style is going to continue to produce deep into his 30s. Yeah, not so fast. Alex Ovechkin is having a Hart Trophy type season. I know we want to give it to, you know, pick your tip of the spear with the Oilers, Leon Draisaitl or Connor McDavid. But I don't know that there's, by definition of the trophy itself, someone more valuable to their team. Because if there's two, you can make the argument there's none. I don't know if there's anyone more valuable to their team right now, outside of goaltending, which I always put in a separate category for this one, because really it should be a goaltender that wins it every year, but that's for another conversation another day. I don't know there's anyone more valuable to their team than Alex Ovechkin right now. And he proves it game in and game out. And he's not wearing down at all. He continues. As he gets older, he seems to be getting better. That's the season right now. 138 points, 71 goals. I don't think anyone thinks that's going to happen, but that's the trend right now for Ovechkin. Caps on top of the league and the division. They'll face off against a very tough Florida Panthers team this evening, one of eight games on the board. We'll hit a break. Bottom of next hour, we'll talk to Mike Russo, who covers the Minnesota Wild for The Athletic. It is the Wild and the Arizona Coyotes. Never a shortage of issues around Minnesota. But joining us next to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins and anything else that's between his ears and behind his nose, Colby Armstrong joins the Merrick Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network in moments.
Still have a timeout available to them here. So if they need it in the back end of this power play, they can use it. What an opportunity. Here it is.
And the power play has been heating up. It scored in four of the last seven games. Went 1-for-3 on Saturday against Montreal. Got the power play goal from Evan Rodriguez. The most important to win that draw. Posting up is Carter in front with the puck is Crosby. Angle down. Low redirection. Score! Power play goal. Put that on the board. It's 1-1 in Calgary.
Calgary Flames would go on to win that game by a score of 2-1 in the shootout. Calgary 6-1-1 in their last eight. Jake Guentzel, by the way, point streak now up to 10 for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Welcome back to the Merrick Show. Mike Russo, bottom of the hour, will talk about the Minnesota Wild. Meanwhile, we'll talk about the Penguins and wherever else this conversation goes, and it may go off the rails early because my next guest is a delightful young man with a lot of different opinions on a lot of different things. He is the one and only Colby Armstrong. He joins me now. How are you, Colbs?
Hey, buddy. Great introduction. I love it. It's great being on the Jeff Merrick Show. This is huge, man. I didn't know what was going to happen coming on your show, and it's very exciting. And I got a text from our good friend Garrett Hansford, who said he'll be tuned in.
Oh, yeah.
So immediately, I got... What's up, G? Yeah, immediately I got nervous. I'm like, oh my God, people listen to Jeff Merrick's show? This is going to be crazy.
I like how you were surprised at that. I really like that as a close friend of mine. It's that kind of support, Colbs, that I can always count on. Before we get into a lot of other things here, feelings mutual. Hey, listen, before we get into a lot of other things here, last night, 2-1 Calgary Flames, Pittsburgh Penguins. Front and center for the Penguins, Jake Guentzel, who's been fantastic, but... how much Calgary Flames have you watched this year?
Not enough. And, man, I got to tell you, they were Yeah, I mean, they were awesome last night. They were rock solid. They smoked the Penguins. The Penguins weren't even close. They couldn't get through the neutral zone. They couldn't establish a forecheck that's been, you know, good for them all season. It's been one of their calling cards, is overwhelming teams and dictating, you know, territory in the offensive zone and stuff like that. And the Flames got out so easily. Their forecheck completely overwhelmed the Penguins. And if it weren't for Tristan Jarry, Jeff, that game would have been about 7-1 in my estimation with the scoring chances. And it was an incredible game by the Flames last night. They were rock solid.
Jarry's been really
good. Not enough hockey.
What's that?
I don't watch them enough, apparently.
Oh, right.
They're rock solid. Like, I mean, they look really good. That Tkachuk top line, Lindholm, Gaudreau was unbelievable. Yeah. They generated about like 10 quality scoring chances, about 5 in the first 10 minutes of the first period. It's no wonder, through looking at the depth of their lineup too, why they're so solid.
Yeah, that top line is one of the best in the NHL going away. And listen, there's question marks about two of them, right? Johnny Gaudreau's on the expiring contract. Matthew Tkachuk's on a RFA last deal. It could take his QO and walk away in a year. That story's been well told. And oh boy, but right now, like, you're right. Like, the Flame, like, you gotta, like, the one person that I hand it here to, because I know a lot of people are talking about Daryl Sutter, but the one person I hand it to is Brad Treliving. Brad Treliving, who had resisted a lot of opportunities to trade away core pieces, betting on the big guys, and also, you know, the players that he brought in the off season to complement the players that are already there, whether it's a player like Blake Coleman, for example, maybe even it's someone like, you know, Brad Richardson or, you know, Trevor Lewis. You know, the season before, it's Jacob Markstrom, who's having a tremendous year.
Oh, unreal.
Dan Vladar, who's having an unreal year as well. Chris Tanev of the season before. It helps when a player like Oliver Shillington pops and boom, all of a sudden he's the guy you've been waiting for so many years and kicks down the door and forces his way onto the roster.
Yeah.
He does a lot of good, and to say nothing of, you know, the Cy Young Award winner, Andrew Mangiapane, with 15 goals and 2 assists, good for 17 points. Like, it's like, there's a lot of really good stories here. And to be honest with you, Colbs, I don't know that Brad Treliving gets enough credit here. What do you think?
Yeah, and you're right. You're right. I mean, you could say what you want about Daryl Sutter, but I don't know if he was the most popular guy. He initially was selected as well, and Treliving went and got him and said, hey, listen, we need this guy here, and plucked him off the farm in Alberta and said, hey, can you come back here and help us? And, you know, people are, oh, he's out, he's old news for hockey, and the dinosaur and blah, blah, blah. Like, right? Like, it wasn't, like, super popular in, you know, where the NHL is headed and the players are headed, but, you know, it was bold. It was bold in understanding his group. And then, like you said, in addressing certain needs and finding players to come in, like even Zadorov and Gudbranson too, like they're their third pairing on their D-core. They're big. They're physical. They can be mean. They're stiff to play against. They're hard to get through. They can defend. And then also they look fairly good at puck moving and making things happen up ice as well. So even as recently as that, as getting those guys on top of the Tanevs, you know, and Markstrom of last year, like you said, and then their veteran depth and finding, I think, you know, Daryl comes into play with, you know, putting some of the pieces together through their lineup and how, you know, their system is and how they're looking and how they're playing. It's you're right. Treliving should get a lot of credit for, you know, what he's gone out and addressed and the way he's kind of made this team look, you know, in underneath what Daryl Sutter has got these guys to buy in. Like, let's remember not that long ago, Jeff, it wasn't great when Daryl came in. This team was, you know, yeah, everything was kind of what's going on. And, you know, he was hard on his best players in post-game press conferences and critical and almost like, you know, laughing in their face at their game and it's not good enough type of thing last year. And I mean, he's got this whole thing completely turned around this year and buy-in right from puck drop as they've started out of the gates. Unbelievable, not only early part of the season, but right off the drop of the puck of most games. And you know, they are a tough team to play against. There's no doubt.
So to the Pittsburgh Penguins end of the rink from last night, and for the Pittsburgh Penguins 22 games in now, they find themselves playing at a 568 clip. 10-7 and yeah. 5, you know, good for 25 points. Fourth place in a really tough metropolitan division with teams like, you know, the Rangers just above them. They're really improved. They get an amazing goaltending from yeah. Coach Shesterkin. The Columbus Blue Jackets, who may be the hardest working team in the NHL right now. To the New Jersey Devils, who tonight face off against San Jose, and they bring Jack Hughes back into the lineup tonight. You get, and some guys like Dawson Mercer have been fantastic for the New Jersey Devils. Say nothing of, you know, defenseman Dougie Hamilton has come back. I look at Pittsburgh and I'm like, if I'm if I'm Hextall and Burke here, I'm like, okay, we're winning games and that's great, but can the team make up its mind whether it wants to be good or it wants to be bad? Because, you know, I look at the Penguins, Colby, and I say it's a team that I think it's the last 7 years they've only had one first round pick. There's not a lot of prospect capital there at all. But if it's a team that bottoms out, it's a team that has an opportunity to make a lot of moves, to pick up picks, to pick up prospects, to start to redevelop this team so they can take that next run while Sidney Crosby's still under contract. I guess you should never critique a team for winning. I guess if you're management, though, are they winning enough so that they can't lose it? Like, there's an old saying, if you're going to miss heaven, don't miss it by 2 inches. Like, they're missing heaven by 2 inches here if you're just in that mushy middle. You know what I mean?
Yeah, mushy middle, yeah. Play in the middle, stay in the middle, draft in the middle. I mean, that's, you know, you just kind of stay afloat. You're right. It's the mushy middle's a really good saying. I mean, I've been amazed with the resilience of this team through this early part of this year, especially with some injuries and COVID and, you know, missing Crosby and Malkin and Crosby returning just, you know, I think he played his 10th game last night. You know, so it's, you know, key players, Gensel, Rust is now out again, and key players with getting put on COVID too, right, Jeff? So I think every team's kind of, you know, seen this kind of come up and strike as well this year. But they've been pretty resilient, and, you know, lots of talk at the start of the season about, you know, the way things finished for Tristan Jarry and, you know, Andy Kyoto coming in as a new goaltending coach. And was that enough? Should they not have done more in goaltending? And how can we trust Jarry? Well, Jarry's been the guy that's, you know, has been an absolute star for this team. He's been consistent. He's been on it. He's been sharp. He's got this team wins. He stole a point last night, almost stole a win from the Calgary Flames somehow. I don't know how the heck he did it. He was unbelievable, but that's how good he's been. And, you know, you talked about Calgary with Tkachuk and contracts and what's going to happen and Gaudreau. They've got the same thing here with Letang and Malkin coming up as well. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting year to see what happens. And, you know, we're going to see Balkan back hopefully in the next month. We're going to see, you know, guys fall into proper spots. I feel like Jeff Carter's kind of, he looks like he's given a lot playing up in the lineup without Crosby and Malkin early this season. He's been good, but he seems like he's running out of gas a little bit. So it'll be good to get Malkin back. But it'll be a big job, I think, for Ron Hextall and company to, you know, negotiate what's going to happen moving forward on top of everything. They just sold the team as well. So you've got some input, I'm sure, by new owners on which way and direction this hockey team's going to go in this franchise and what it's going to look like in moving forward. So this is going to be, I think, a big second half of the season for the Penguins because, Jeff, you know the prospects, Legere, Poulin, those are like their two kind of forward prospects that I know they're fairly high on developing, and P.O. Joseph, who's had stints up and down on the back end, who they acquired.
I like him.
Arizona,
I like him, Cole.
I like
Pierre Olivier Joseph.
Good.
I like him, man. Yeah, that's the one guy that I circled. I like him.
Yeah, people are loving his game here, and the times he's had up here, I mean, he's going to be a bright spot on the back end for the Penguins, I think, in years to come. Big, tall, lanky, skates, he's smooth, he can defend, he uses body well, he can chip in offensively. So he's kind of like that new, big, lanky, tall, new age defenseman that everyone kind of talks about, and he's developing really nicely here. So, you know, what else is there in the system, though? Not much. And, you know, they know that. They know what the cupboards look like here in Pittsburgh and what they've done. I've always felt all along, though, Jeff, and I don't know if you feel the same way, but I'm like, if you've got like two horse centermen, which you've had for over a decade here, You've got Letang and you know, other surrounding pieces on the back end. You've always kind of had a Fleury, then you had a Murray, and you know, you've got a Jari who's showing that he can be a horse too. And Ned, like, it's like, how do you not kind of get, you know, hypnotized or look at kind of, yeah, you know, what are we going to use these first round picks for when we've got our core group that looks the way it does?
Oh, again, I agree. Rough.
You know, Dumoulin and all these guys that come along, it's like, we've got those guys. We can trade for, you know, other pieces, surrounding pieces, intangible pieces, lineup, and bolster it. And, you know, that's kind of been the philosophy here for the Penguins all along. And, you know, there's no lack in trying to go for it and trying to win every single year. And I think I would do the same thing if I was running the ship here when you've got a core group that's been like that for this long.
I have zero problems with how – now, you may – argue about the actual trades.
It will
themselves,
come to an end. But, it will come to an end.
Yeah, no, like, listen, we've all been there. Like, at a certain point in the evening, you know, they turn the lights on and the taps are closed and, you know, someone walks over with a long piece of paper and everybody ties their shoes waiting for someone else to pick up the piece of paper. Like, it happens. I don't think that anybody has any problem with how, you know, the philosophy that Rutherford had, which is, you know, we've got these horses here. I don't care about, we always say green bananas, like prospects and pick. Who cares? You know, our chance to win the Stanley Cup is right. I don't think anyone would argue with how Rutherford conducted business that may. You may quibble about, you know, returns and did they get enough and that measure off the trades. But the philosophy is completely sound. Like, when you have these players, you go for it every year. I think everyone gets it.
Yep.
And that's where I come back to the Penguins now. And I wonder, like, I think this is going to be a really interesting trade deadline when we get to it for the Pittsburgh Penguins. I'm really curious about Brian Rust. I don't think that's someone that's poised to, you know, set himself up and his family up for the rest of their lives with a big contract. I don't think that'll be with Pittsburgh. So I could see him being available. And then you have a lot of other players. You know, you mentioned Jeff Carter a couple of seconds ago. Maybe even someone like Kasperi Kapanen. You know, dare you say someone like Chris Letang? Like, if you wanted to restock the cupboards, you could do it pretty quickly and play kingmaker this year if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins this year with the amount of players that you have available to you. I just don't know. I mean, you're closer to it than I am. Are they there yet? Are they there?
Well, and I've heard, you know what, I haven't seen, you know, and you know what's going to happen with Hextall and Burke, and I think the listening and the coming in and the assessing and the prospects and Wilkes-Barre and what they're seeing in, you know, really looking to, you know, put their stamp on this team or put it in a direction that they see. And when's that going to happen? Is it going to happen at the deadline this year? I mean, it could. Are they there yet? I think that's a really good question. And I haven't heard, you know, Jay Gensel's name as a guy that, will he last here as well? Is he a guy that, you know, could, you know, be moved on as well and get good return for? So when you're looking to do that. So I know we're closer to it than further from it with this group and this team. It's just a matter of when. And I think, you know, when you get new GMs and new people in positions and Berkey and, you know, at heads of hockey operations in this situation that are looking at it and come in and believe, I think they've taken their time to really assess and look at what everything looks like here with this team. And, you know, I think they're going to have a plan in place sooner than later of where they want to move this team and, you know, how quickly do you want to, you know, transition, really, right? So it's a big job. It's a big job in that hiring and David Morehouse hiring them and having them come in knowing that they're going to, you know, kind of shape possibly the future and look of this organization and team in the future. But, you know, as long as you've got guys, I think a big key, Jeff, will be the way Malkin looks when he comes back, the way, you know, Malkin can come back off of this knee surgery, come back and fit in, and how he can produce play as his contract's expiring as well, and what they look at possibly doing moving forward. And I don't know if you kind of can do anything of significance until you see, you know, how he bounces back from this injury, obviously being, you know, a massive game-changing player in Malkin. And I think he's going to be a big key in the way he looks and the way this team looks with him in it.
That's a big injury. for someone who's 30. Yeah. Like, that's a big injury period, let alone someone who's 35 Jeff, years old.
I was saying, like, if this happened to me at 35, I would quit hockey. Like, I've seen guys. Like, that's me, though. That's me. That's... yeah, like I am weak. I'm a weak man. But I've seen guys, like several guys. Yeah. I remember Ramsey Abid. I remember David Krejci. I remember seeing guys that have had knee issues and surgeries and the excruciating rehabs that go into this and tears in their eyes just trying to bend their knee out of the gates and what it took and the work it took and the amount it took to come back from these things. And I'm telling you, it is a lot. It is a lot on players, and Gino's had injury issues through his career. I mean, I love his game. I love the fire he plays with. Yeah. I love that he's on the edge. I love that he's an angry bear. I love that he's a little bit dangerous. But what comes with that, with a big body presence like him and his game and his a little bit of recklessness, is some injuries. And so, you know, he's dealing with a big one later in his career right now, where it gets even harder as it is. So you're right. You're right, man. It's a tough thing, and that's why I think it's going to be key to see, you know, how big 71 looks in this lineup coming back. And I know he's traveled with the team. He skated with them yesterday at pregame skate, and he's kind of working those steps of integrating himself back into the practices and stuff like that, which is a good sign. So we'll see how he progresses, and I think it's important to watch him and see how he progresses through the season when he does get back to the lineup.
Let me ask you about the new ownership group here. Not specifically them, but just having this type of company and this type of corporation own the Pittsburgh Penguins. This is a team where the Steelers are family-owned. The Pirates are family-owned. Like, there's a vibe around an organization based on who the owner is. And listen, sometimes it's positive, sometimes it's negative. Like, I went through... You know, growing up as a kid, you know, my home team with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and it was owned by Harold Ballard. So you can imagine the circus that was. But still, like, there are some owners that are loved in their marketplaces, some families who own teams loved, and quite the opposite in other situations. And I always wonder how much it changes the sports landscape in a city. Do you think it'll change the sports landscape in Pittsburgh, this new ownership group? It's not a family. It's not a person you can point to and say, hey, this family owns the Penguins. That person owns the Penguins. It's now, it's Fenway Sports. It's not a person. Yeah. Does that change things?
You know what? Yeah, it's different. And you know, people that aren't never been here or don't know anything, Pittsburgh's a smaller market, really. It's a small city. It's, you know, I see the same people at the Steelers games you see at the Penguins games, and the same people that are working the Steelers games that are at the Penguins games.
Right.
And you run into people all the time everywhere, like, small world, funny running, but it's just Pittsburgh. That's what happens here, and that's the way it is here. And, you know, you talk about these families, and people know each other, and people know these families that own these teams. They've been here forever, and it's just, you know, it has that family, homey feeling. So, you know, even Jeff, it was funny, the other day they asked one of the Steelers players, too, about this Fenway Sports Group buying the Penguins, and he's like, oh, a group from Boston being in Pittsburgh? Like, what the hell? I think it was Cam Hayward that said it, too, who's like, you know, one of the, you know, bigger influential players of the team. It's just funny he said that, because that's like so Pittsburgh, you know? But yeah, it is. It's going to be different. It's going to be, I think, different in that way of looking at, you know, ownership of our sports teams here in Pittsburgh. You know, with them coming on board, coming on the scene, I think, you know, they hit with a massive magnitude as well when you look at, you know, the properties that they own and, you know, what's under their umbrella and other teams and franchises that they run. I think what's exciting, at least for the Penguins anyway, is not only what I just said, but real estate, media, all marketing, all those big picture items underneath the umbrella that is Fenway Sports Group coming into this this market, this organization and this team, because they're kicking off building a massive project across the street from PPG Paints Arena, where the old Mellon Arena was, Lower Hill District project. We're talking, you know, what you see at Maple Leaf Square type of stuff. Buildings, office space, retail, parks. It's huge. So there's more to it, you know, to the picture than just the, you know, what's on the ice. And to look at the big picture that, you know, what the Penguins are to the city, for Fenway Sports Group, come in and be a part of that and marketing a lot of the stuff here with the Penguins in the city, I think is going to be a huge asset. And I wise too for myself here working, doing radio, TV, and you know, they're streaming and what they're looking to do and cutting edge stuff that they look to do, I think, with, you know, a lot of their properties, and I think is you know, a huge bonus, I think, and for the Penguins as well. Do we get a price tag on that yet? I haven't really seen it. I've heard
between 850 to 900 is what I was told.
Yeah, I think it's up around there, so a significant price tag for I think a team that's, you know, the sale's been floated over the last, I don't know how many years now, just, you know, seeking interest, and it's out there, I think. And another key point I think is huge too, and really smart of Fenway is, you know, to be obviously open and want to keep on Mario, and now Ron Burkle announced as well. So those two will, you know, the original guys have been here for a long time doing this and having great success with this organization, sticking around. It's kind of, you know, especially Mario as the faces of yeah, you know, that partnership.
So if I know anything about you, the minute you heard about this sale, you started a crash course on everything you need to know about the Red Sox and Liverpool, true or false.
I'm working on it. I am working on it. Well, I'll tell you one thing, and you know, we're buddies with you know, Ryan Whitney, and I played with him. Yeah. And of course I remember playing with him in Wilkes-Barre, massive Red Sox fan, like diehard, and
yes,
him kind of sucking me in. I wasn't really totally into baseball, but him sucking me into like those great, like, you know, exercising the demons, Red Sox curse runs and beating the Yankees and coming back and all that stuff. So I was around him for those moments and what that means and, you know, how great that franchise is. And you know, then we have some other people here I'm friends with in media who are soccer fans, who are diehard fans for their soccer team. So, you know, I'm kind of brushing up, Jeffy. I'm brushing up, buddy.
Attaboy.
I need help, though. I'm
Protect
a complete
yourself.
Hockey nerd. I need
I
to
know.
Spread my wings. I'm a hockey nerd, and I'm self-admitted hockey nerd.
There's hope for you yet, young Jedi. There's hope. Hey, listen, I do want to. I am curious about, because listen, you know Mario from your playing days, from your broadcasting days. Your house before you sold it used to back onto the course
yeah,
where him and Pierre LaRouche used to play golf every morning. What is, we always hear, oh, Mario saved this franchise twice. But outside of that, like, what's Mario's legacy here in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, you know, I think about that a lot, just being here, because, you know, my kids play hockey here in town. And I think what Mario's done to put, you know, really hockey on the map, and we see now what Crosby's done in that, and you know, that doesn't happen without Mario saving the team and Mario, you know, getting a new rank deal and everything kind of happening and not letting the team leave. And so that's kind of pushed everything. When you look at the big picture, like the business of sports and the business of hockey and what it does for a city, like you're talking restaurants, you know, ushers at the rink, valet parking at all these things, hotels, where hockey has boomed, the new practice facility, partnerships with medicine, his foundation here, like everything. I mean, I would, as good as he and great, good, as great as his career was, and obviously cut short at certain times and with injuries and illness, I've got to look at the impact of his career and his, what he's done off the ice. Mm-hmm. It might be even bigger than what he did, what he's done on the ice, just from honestly living here and seeing the impact it has on people's lives in this city, in the small downtown that we have, and how big it is, with keeping the team here and what he's done for Pittsburgh. So talk about a guy that is honestly a legend in Pittsburgh, like the biggest thing you can be to a city and to people. It's Mario Lemieux here in Pittsburgh. It's so cool to see him every day at the rink. It's cool to see him at my old place when he'd come by golfing all the time. He's quick. He's witty. He's funny. He's like got an aura about him. Like, it's tough to talk when you're around him almost, because he's just got that presence. And you know, he's like a true Pittsburgher, although from Quebec. So yeah, the people here love him. The people here love him, though, Jeffy. Yeah. They love him.
Well, what was that story you told me about in the Ottawa series when him and Pierre were golfing? What was that one?
Oh, yeah, they dropped one of the games, I think. I don't know if this is the right one, but...
Was it the Ottawa
series?
Oh,
well, I can't remember. I might have been, like, the final when it got drawn back for, like, another game at home, and they had a chance to wrap it up on home ice, and they could have swept. And I said, oh, ho-hum, another home gate for you, as he's getting out of his cart. And he's like, oh, yeah, another new pair of shoes. He goes... It was a great line. It was so quick and witty. I was laughing. But you know what, Jeff? I'd sit out there. I'd see him come up, and I'd be out in the backyard with the kids, and he'd come by in the golf cart. And, like, you know, I don't know if I told you, like, you know the winky, pointy finger that, like, if I did, I'd look like a total nerd?
Yes.
He comes driving by in the cart as he's coming up, like, around the bend up, and I look up. I see it's him, and he's got, like, his little hand out, like a gun. Like, he's giving me, like, the... Like, what's up, bud? Winky pointy finger. And it was like the coolest looking thing I'd ever seen. Like, if I did that or anyone else did that, it's embarrassing. Like, that's such an old school, like, you know, but he did it and it was like immediately the coolest thing I'd ever seen. So that's, yeah, Mario's just a real cool guy. He is awesome.
It's awesome. That's great. Always got time for Mario Lemieux stories. Kolbs, kept you a long time. Thanks so much for this. Hey, good luck to the kids playing hockey, as always. And say
buddy,
hi to
my... see my backyard rink? Did you see the backyard rink?
No,
did
you
tweet
it out?
I know you're a big backyard rink guy.
I'm a big ODR guy.
I may have tweeted it out, but nice rinks. I got that set up. I know you're a guy for them. And
yeah, man. Yeah.
I'm fired up about it. They did hook me up good. It's looking good. I'm just waiting for the weather to get right for me. You know how the battle with the weather that we hockey dads have with our backyard rinks.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's we're the same. We're just waiting to get the tarp down and get the water in, but it's got to get cold.
Yeah, we need it, buddy. Good luck with that. Making memories this winter.
All right, man. Best to the kiddies. Make some good memories, pal. We'll talk soon. There he is, Colby Armstrong from the NHL on Sportsnet. Covers the Pittsburgh Penguins as well in Pittsburgh. Some great Mario Lemieux talk there. And listen, that's one of the more intriguing teams and will become trade deadline time. Should they make the decision to fold on the season and look to the future as the cupboards are basically bare with the Pittsburgh Penguins right now. But it's still a team that's in the mix for the playoffs. And as such, that complicates things. We'll hit a break. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk to Mike Russo about the Minnesota Wild. Tonight they're playing against the Arizona Coyotes. But of particular importance with the Minnesota Wild, it's a team that's tops in their division. It's a team that has one of the more exciting players in the NHL in Kirill Kaprizov on it. And he's heating up. And there are trade rumors around Kevin Fiala. Ask all these questions and more. Russo's next as America's Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Taken away by Rask. Goodrow tries to jump around Sorelli. Rask and Killorn converge in the corner. Goodrow out front for Fiala. Rask scores! Victor Rask scratched the last couple of games. Picks up where he left off. 5 points in his last four, and he has Minnesota in front 2-1.
Minnesota Wild, top team in the Central, 14 wins, 6-1 with 29 points, playing at a .690 clip. I know the Colorado Avalanche are coming. Nathan MacKinnon returns to the lineup Wednesday against the Toronto Maple Leafs. But Minnesota turning some heads, and someone who's documented all of it for years, our good friend Mike Russo from The Athletic, who joins me now. Mike, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing great, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, before we get to this year's edition of the Minnesota Wild and some other issues around the NHL, I want to talk to you about Mikko Koivu. And his number 9 goes to the rafters March the 13th. That'll be a game against the Nashville Predators. And I said this a couple of weeks ago when Marian Hossa went into the Hockey Hall of Fame. I'll say it again this year. about someone like Mikko Koivu. I don't know how Marian Hossa was able to make it through a career without at least bumping into the Selke Trophy, and I'll say the same thing about Mikko Koivu. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, to me, he's one of the best defensive players that I've ever covered, especially, you know, at the center position. He made it hard on, you know, that's how I judge a defensive player. Opposing offensive players hated playing against Mikko. He was tough. He was all over you. He never cheated the game offensively, probably much to the chagrin of some Wild fans that wished he did more offensively. And he was just a fabulous, fabulous player. And what was really ironic about that is that really it was late in Mikko's career during one of Bruce Boudreau's seasons here where he finally got some Selke love. And I think sometimes, you know, I don't want to rip on my PHWA brethren, but I think sometimes we have in our own head who the best defensive players are in the league, and we just kind of stick with that, and it's always the same old, same old. And you know, that's why I was actually impressed last year that Eriksson Ek finished fourth in Selke voting. I think that was a pretty astute voting amongst my peers. But Mikko really, to me, deserved to get a lot more love than he did. He played the game hard for a long time. His first day in this organization was my first day covering the team. And he's the first player I ever introduced myself to in the locker room in 2005. And he was this young rookie that looked scared to death and didn't know anything. And then, you know, just to see that contrast of him standing in front of that backdrop today, knowing that nobody will ever wear his number again in a Wild uniform, it was just, you know, it was hard for me to not look at him and just think back to that first day that he was in this organization. And, you know, it's pretty impressive what he did here. And I think that, you know, he's quite honored. It's going to happen a day after his 39th birthday, coincidentally 2 years to the day from the league shutting down too. And he talked about that today, Jeff, about how he never got to say thank you to the fans and just because of the pandemic and things like that. So I think that March 13th will be a really special day in his life to really put a wrap on his career.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned Joel Eriksson Ek there as well. And I want to get to him in a couple of seconds, dovetailing the conversation about Mikko Koivu. Nine goes to the rafters on March 13th. What was he? I mean, listen, you saw him, you know, you said like from day one. How did you see him grow as someone more and more comfortable in that room? And we've seen players, you know, that are shy church mice when they first, you know, start with an NHL team. And then, like, quite literally, you just see them blossom just as hockey players and human beings as well, right in front of your very eyes. How did he grow in front of you, Mike?
Yeah, I will tell you, you know, when I think of Mikko Koivu, I think of a guy like Ray Whitney, too. Those two players hated to lose more than anybody I've ever covered in my life. Like, Mikko Koivu, after a loss, was not somebody you wanted to interview. He had to walk on eggshells. He hated to lose. And I think a lot of that just comes from his upbringing, you know, with his father, a very stern man. And I think that Mikko was that way. He came here and he was always respectful to the people before him. You know, Brian Ralston, Nick Schultz, these guys became people that he really looked up to, Andrew Brunette. And he tried to take a lot from them, and he led the way that he wanted to. A lot of times he was almost sometimes too intense. I think after he had children, like we see a lot of athletes, he started to chill out a little bit and started, you know, smile more and laugh more and realize that, you know, that hockey could be fun too, and came to the rink and wasn't nearly as on edge. But he wore that, you know, nobody in this organization's history was more loyal to the logo. He never wanted to go anywhere. He always, you know, it was always about the team with him. And as I said, he could have cheated the game offensively. And, you know, he was a fabulous passer, a great playmaker, but he was never going to cheat the game on the defensive side of the puck, which is why Jacques Lemaire loved him. And, you know, the other anecdote that he said today, and I've written every Mikko Koivu story imaginable. I've, you know, gone out and had coffees with him, lunches with him a gazillion times. And he said something today that he's never said before, that when the going got tough late in his career, he used to call Jacques Lemaire for advice. And he said that Jacques Lemaire would answer the phone and just, you know, sort of chuckle, knowing that obviously it was a dark time right then in Nico's life, and he needed to ask advice about how to lead or how to deal with a certain situation. And I always knew the respect level that Jacques and Mikko had for each other, but I never knew it was to that point that Mikko would often call Jacques to ask for advice many, many years after Jacques coached this team. And I just thought that was a pretty interesting anecdote today that Mikko, for the first time, ever really said out loud.
Perfect coach for him? Like when you look at the skill set, I know we, you know, he could have been more offensive, but when you look at the skill set of Mikko Koivu and you sort of marry the player to the coach, there are some players that clash. Like this is the wrong player for this coach, but for Koivu and Lemaire, it seemed hand to glove.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that was Jacques, right? I mean, Jacques, same way. I mean, he's one of the great defensive players, but he also had the ability to contribute offensively. And the one thing Jacques used to always love about Mikko is that he never had to teach him the defensive side of the puck. You know, a lot of these, and that's the great thing about a lot of the Finnish players that come over here and Swedish players, is they've got that defensive, you know, we're seeing with Eriksson Ek now, it's like you almost have to teach them offense, where a lot of North Americans, you got to teach them the defensive side of the game. So Jacques always respected him. He started him on the fourth line here with guys like Derek Bugard and Kyle Wanvig. He was playing 5, 6, 7 minutes a night that first year in 2005, and then slowly but surely he bit off more and more responsibility to the lineup, to the point that he became the first and second line center for this team for years. And look, to be honest, I mean, you know, if he was on a lot of other teams that were probably more established, you know, he probably wouldn't have ever been in a top line role for those type of teams. But Mikko had to do it all here for many, many years. Win big draws, be out there in the last minute, whether you're up a goal, down a goal, tied. And he always did it with an intensity that's like second to none of anybody in a Wild organization. And, you know, if you weren't going to retire his number, then who, right? I mean, we'd be waiting for Kaprizov years down the road. I mean, I think even if he had to admit that, you know, he kind of wishes that he didn't sign in Columbus and just called it a career. But, you know, he talked a lot today, too, also, Jeff, about how, you know, now getting a different perspective, sitting with Billy Guerin in the management booth, and how managers have to make tough decisions. And he understands why he was sort of the first guy in the culture change of the Minnesota Wild. You know, Bill Guerin, in a very short order, essentially got rid of Mikko, got rid of Eric Staal, got rid of Devan Dubnyk, obviously Zach Parise, Ryan Suter. And at the time, it was very emotional for Mikko, to the point that he didn't want to call it quits, and obviously had the short little tenure in Columbus. But now, after seeing this team and how good it's been this year and watching from above, he realizes why it was time to move on from a lot of the old guard. And I think that Mikko really now understands it and respects that players have to play the game and managers have to make the tough decisions. And I think he, getting that perspective now, totally understands why Bill Guerin made the decisions that he made.
Dancers dance and fiddlers fiddle, something I was taught very, very early in my career. With Mike Russo covering the Minnesota Wild tonight, they'll face off against the Arizona Coyotes. And the bigger Wild news is number 9 goes to the rafters March 13th, as Mikko Koivu's number will be worn by nobody else. 9 is now sacred in Minnesota. So a couple of seconds ago there, we mentioned Joel Eriksson Ek. And listen, had Edmonton not made the Griffin Reinhart deal, that was a player they would have taken in that spot. We all know that. By this time, that's one of the stories that has been told from that draft specifically. And he's someone that, you know, because I'm with you, Mike. Like, I think the Selke Trophy is more reputationally based than anything else.
Yep.
And it's tough to crack, you know, it's tough to crack that, like, you know, Bergeron, O'Reilly, Couturier. It's tough to crack that group. But Joel Eriksson Ek has, and he is in the conversation. Sorelli is now in that conversation. I think that someone like Nico Hischier one day is going to be in that conversation as well. How did Joel Eriksson Ek do it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, because, for a long time I watched him, and especially offensively, I didn't know that if he'd ever have the ability to contribute offensively. And now he not only did it last year, but he has picked up right where he left off this year, and is getting, you know, right now he's actually reunited with the line that he played on for most of last year that was so effective for them, with Jordan Greenway and Marcus Foligno. But he's scored huge goals, especially late. I mean, tying goals, extra attacker goals, constantly doing it this year. But defensively, he is such a pain in the butt to play against. I mean, just watch him. Nobody on the ice for the Minnesota Wild makes an opponent lose their mind more than Eriksson Ek. And he plays the game completely honestly and says nothing. There's no smack talking, nothing. Like, I mean, Wild players joke that the reason why players lose their mind on him is because he's always draped on top of them. And then they get mad and they look at him, and he just looks at them with this little weird look, like just stares at him, like, what? Why are you mad at me right now? Like, he doesn't seem to get why he ticks off opponents. I mean, but he's a shadow to these guys. And it's because he's always moving his feet. He's not taking bad penalties. He plays the game completely, honestly. Like, doesn't have a dirty part, you know, in his body. Where a guy like Ryan Hartman, who's a fabulous defensive two-way player as well, plays on the edge and sometimes will absolutely go over that edge. Where Eriksson Ek just plays the game completely honestly. And I think that this guy is going to win Selkies in his career. He's that good of a player. He's young. He's big. He skates like nobody. They call him Mr. September here in Minnesota because he's perennially winning the Fitness of Training Camp Award. You know, he just comes in impeccable shape. He is a pro's pro. I mean, he, you know, if Jared Spurgeon didn't have the C on his chest here for the next 7 years, he could very easily be the captain of this team one day.
You mentioned Ryan Hartman there a second ago, and that is one of the more interesting names on this team right now. Like, this is, like, I think for a lot of years, I mean, I watched him play at Plymouth in the OHL, and at times he was dominant. There was a top prospects game that I was at in Halifax where he was a beast on the ice. Chicago, Philadelphia. He's been around a little bit. He's 27 years old now. Seems to have really found a home with the Minnesota Wild. How come it's all clicked now? Here he is, you know, 16 points, top 6 minutes, you know, 17 minutes a night. Yep. What's happened to Ryan Hartman?
Yeah, he had to be patient, and he's a team player. You know, he followed really the template that Marcus Foligno had. When Marcus Foligno was acquired for Jason Pominville and Marco Scandella, he played 7 minutes a night, didn't get on any special teams, fourth line, and he slowly found his voice and then his footing, and then he became one of the most impactful players on the Minnesota roster. And Hartman had to deal with the same thing, you know, fourth line minutes, barely getting special teams. Now suddenly he's on the power play. He's first over the boards on the PK. And now he's playing between Kaprizov and Zuccarello, essentially. Zuccarello's hurt right now, so Rem Pitlick's in that spot. But he's scoring every night, 9 goals in his last 13 games. And he's such a team player, Jeff. I mean, this is a guy that last year realized that they had to re-sign Kaprizov, they had to re-sign Fiala, they had to re-sign Eriksson Ek. And what did he do? He went out and took a pay cut for a 3-year deal when he could have gone to the open market and easily made some significant money this year. And, but Bill Guerin really sold him on, one, the plan that he was going to get more responsibility for this lineup, but two, that the grass isn't always greener elsewhere. Aren't you tired of traveling around? He was on Chicago, then traded to Nashville, then traded to Philly, then infamously he's in the woods with no cell phone and didn't even know that his rights were traded to Dallas and they didn't give him an extended qualifying offer. And finally he gets to a satellite phone and finds out that he's a free agent a couple years ago and ultimately agrees on the 3-year deal here. I mean, it's just a great, great story. And so this is a bargain contract right now. He's essentially the first line center on this team, making $1.7 million on a 47-goal pace right now. It's pretty impressive. Skates great, gritty as heck. And obviously we're seeing why he's a first-round pick. He's got great hands. I mean, these aren't just fluky goals he's scoring. This is every night scoring a clutch goal for this team. Scoring in last seconds. And that's been one reason why this team's on top of the Central right now. It's, you know, Kaprizov is now absolutely on fire, but Fiala is still struggling to score. But yet the depth of this team right now, guys like Hartman, Eriksson Ek, Foligno, Nico Sturm, Brandon Duhaime. It's the reason why their incredible output that they get from their blue line leading the league in points right now. It's one huge reason why this team's making some noise, at least early going here in the Western Conference.
Kevin Fiala, polarizing player in Nashville, interesting player with the Minnesota Wild as well. We keep hearing trade rumors surrounding his name. I don't think that personally, and you know him better than I do, I don't know that Bill Guerin wants to overreact to things and, you know, just ship him off to the first person that makes a decent offer. But what's the plan with Kevin Fiala here in Minnesota?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely, you're completely right. Like, I don't think that he's just going to go and trade Kevin Fiala just, you know, to do it. I think the reason why you're going to see Kevin's names in trade rumors from now until the end of the year is just based on the situation that this team has. They have $12.7 million in dead money coming up here with Parisian Suter, then 14.7 and 14.7. And they've got a lot of guys still to re-sign. Nico Sturm, Jordan Greenway, Matt Dumba's only got 2 years left on his deal. And then you got Fiala. And last summer, the Wild didn't commit long-term to Kevin Fiala. He wanted to sign long-term. They actually made the rare decision of taking him to arbitration. And I'll ultimately they settled, but that spoke volumes that they did not want to commit to him long term. And so because of that, you know, right now it's we're just going to see that for we're going to see those rumors for a while now, Jeff, whether he's playing great or not playing great. But because of it, because the Wild, I think, feel like they are still a center away from being a true contender in the West, and because of the dead money coming up, I do genuinely believe that Bill Guerin is going to make a move at some point for a significant name. And to do that, it's got to be pretty much dollar out, dollar in. And so that's why I think that Fiala's name is getting out there right now. He's just really not producing at all right now. He's turning pucks over. He's been benched at times. You know, one game taken off the power play completely in Florida, but now back on it. There's no doubt that he and Dean Evason sometimes drive each other crazy. And so, you know, I still think that we're going to see Kevin Fiala light it up at some point. We've seen it the last 2 years. He gets on these runs where he'll get 25, 30 points in a, you know, 15, 18 game stretch. And it just hasn't happened for him yet. He still works his butt off every game, still gets generates tons and tons of chances. And just for some reason, it's not going in for him right now.
Few cover their beat as well as you do, Mike. Thanks, as always, for doing this. Special day for Mikko Koivu. Great that you were there to document it. We look forward to March 13th when the number goes to the rafters. Thanks so much for doing this. Enjoy the game tonight.
Yep, anytime, Jeff. Take care.
There he is, Mike Russo from The Athletic, covers the Minnesota Wild, and there's a lot of great beat reporters in this game, like a lot of really good men and women that cover their teams and do so professionally and in-depth, even in challenging times when you can't always be face-to-face, if at all, can't really be face-to-face with any of the athletes that you cover. But Russo is amongst, if not the tops, amongst all of them, and that is a consensus around the industry. And again, there are great ones. All right, so the main news of the day today is still the COVID situation, which continues through the NHL and is now carried into the American Hockey League as well, with the Providence Bruins, the Hershey Bears, Bridgeport Islanders. It's not good. It's not good at all. And we see today Tyler Bozak goes on the COVID protocol list. Cody Ceci with Edmonton, their practice shut down. It's an ongoing story. Unfortunately, one that we're going to have to update, it seems, each and every day here on the program. In the meantime, 8 games on the go around the NHL this evening. Enjoy them. We're back with more of the Merrick Show tomorrow across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Thanks to Lance Kennedy. And thanks to my producer, Matt Marchese. We're back tomorrow.